the hardest part of cosmetology school, besides, of course, showing up, is that you're learning to express your art on a canvas that has an opinion.
Hello, I'm Rebecca Taylor.
Hey, I'm Buddy Porter.
This is Ben Mullen.
Hey, it's Sophie Pope.
Hi, this is Kate Torrealba, and you're listening to the Hair Game Podcast.
Hey, listener, I'm Eric Taylor. The state of California moved Ventura County, which is just north of LA, to Tier 2 finally, and Ventura County itself immediately opened personal care services in salons, which is esthetician, it's all the non-hair stuff. Estheticians, lashes, brows, massage, etc. So that is great news for Ventura County beauty pros. For LA County is bumping right up against the metric that will qualify it to move to Tier 2. We hit that metric for 1 week, a couple weeks ago. We were there for 1 week, and then we just kind of bounced out of it. But we're now hovering right around the same level. LA County needs to be under 900 unadjusted new cases per day for 2 weeks in order for that to happen, okay? That's 900 unadjusted, and that qualifies for the 700 adjusted cases per day. If you're confused, so is everybody else, but you can look it up and they explain it. In other news, we expanded Salon Republic's Valencia location. That's open now. Valencia, just north of LA. Also, Salon Republic Linwood, Washington. It's our first Washington State location. That'll be opening in the new year in January 2021, which is coming upon us very quickly. Also, our first Northern California location in Sunnyvale in Silicon Valley will be opening in December. Go to salonrepublic.com for details and to set up a tour. Pod Loot giveaway time. Apple iWatch. This is probably our fifth iWatch that we're giving away. And the winner is Tangled Up Salon VB. Tangle Up Salon VB, DM me at the Hair Game Podcast Instagram with your mailing address, and we will send you the Apple iWatch. At the end of the show, I'll tell you what will be given away next week and how you can win it. Now to the episode with Adrian. How you doing, Adrian?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So we're both at home. You're seeing my kids' playroom behind me, and I'm seeing, are you in your salon's office? Where are you right now?
I am. I'm in the office of my salon, which is at all times some sort of a mess.
Yeah. Actually, it looks pretty good. I see like organizers in the background, like folders. It looks like you're putting effort towards organization.
It's a slow effort. It's kind of all just, it's all for show. I want to look like I'm busy.
Yes. Well, I'm very impressed, and so are the listeners. Okay.
Thank you.
So I'm going to introduce you. You're a hairdresser from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Actually, I don't know if you're from there, but you are there, right?
Correct.
Okay. You're a blonding expert. You're the founder of ADH. I assume that's Adrian Dara Hair, right?
Correct.
ADH Education and the Lightning Library, which is online education and coaching. You're a salon-centric ambassador, Brazilian bond builder, artist, and trust, and you work with trust as well. Is that right?
That is correct. I am all of those things.
Cool. Did I miss anything?
I don't think so. I mean, I'd like to think I'm a stand-up comedian too, but it never really took off, so...
You just elevated the expectations of thousands of people. So now you're going to have to bring it.
All right, I'm ready. I've got lots of jokes.
The pressure is on. Okay, let's hear it. Let's start with a joke then.
Okay, well, I can share with you a little fact to start. My cosmetology school graduation, we started off, I think, with 17 students, and only four of us stuck it out till the end. And so we weren't going to have a graduation. So the head of the school said, you guys can do whatever you want. So I said I wanted to do a roast, and I wanted to roast everyone in my class. And she let me do it. It didn't go over quite well, but the joke was this. I said in Pennsylvania, you're required to have 1,500 hours completed to get your cosmetology license. In the case of everyone here, some of their clients sat so long in their chair for a highlight, that they also got licensed at the end. I mean, that's how bad my jokes are. So, it never took off.
I'm laughing. I think that was funny.
It's kind of like a pity laugh, but I appreciate it.
No, I think that's absolutely funny. And I imagine there's lots of little idiosyncratic, humorous jokes that come out of beauty school.
Yes, there are so many, and so many experiences.
So why only 4 out of 17?
I think very brave people decide to go to cosmetology school and actually move forward with it as a career. And I think that on the outside, maybe it seems kind of like a simple trade. But the hardest part of cosmetology school, besides, of course, showing up, is that you're learning to express your art on a canvas that has an opinion. So I think a lot of people sort of start falling off the wagon as you continue to move through the process of cosmetology school. So I guess only the strong survive, or maybe only the like psychotic survive, because it takes a lot of strength to be a hairstylist.
Is it because it's hard to express the creativity on the canvas, or is it because the canvas is so opinionated? Which is harder?
I think in the beginning of your career, it's because the canvas is so opinionated. And when you think about going to cosmetology school, you don't even know about that part of the industry. And I think that's a major thing that I do wish we had more training in and insight in early on in our careers, not so that we could say, oh, I don't think I want to do this anymore, but just so you're prepared for what it feels like the first experience you have when someone says, I don't like my hair.
All right. Well, in beauty school, you're doing clients, right? These are real clients who are coming in. They're paying, although a lower amount, because they know that they're going to a beauty school and these are students working on them. Do they have the same standards and expectations as they might in a normal salon?
I think they do, only because they don't know. They're not educated necessarily, depending upon the school that you go to, I think. But they're not necessarily educated on what they are getting into. Okay. I talk to a lot of clients who think that when they go to a cosmetology school, they're just getting a simple haircut. But what's happening for the stylist behind the chair, it's a terrifying experience. I mean, I remember very clearly the first person's hair who I cut, and I was completely shaking. I mean, my hands were shaking. I was mumbling my words. It was a terrible haircut. and it didn't dissuade me from wanting to continue to do hair, but it made me think, is this is what it's like every single time I'm going to do someone's hair? I don't know if I can do this.
Sure.
But, the desire to move forward and, do something that I knew I could do it. I didn't know when that feeling was going to subside. And it goes on for years. And it still comes back up sometimes, right? If you have the wrong person in your chair, I guess. But
yeah, very interesting. Do you not learn, I mean, as you're in beauty school, you're doing all these clients who may or may not have reasonable expectations of the service that they're going to get. I mean, do you not learn how to deal with the difficult ones? I mean, just as a natural process of going through, because you're in there for a long time, 1,500 hours, a long time.
I think it's a great question. Here's what I think, that in any career, you become more seasoned with time and experience. And you almost have to go through those, I don't want to call them negative experiences, because I actually think that they build character and I think they build strength. But you have to go through those experiences in general so that you can gain the tools that you need in order to handle them in the future. I mean, if you think about it in a lot of ways, and I don't know if I'm going too far off topic, but something I have always felt is that clients are similar to relationships. So if you've ever had what we call a bad client, which they're probably not a bad person, but they're just not the right fit for you. It's kind of like that person you used to date that just wasn't right. There was a disconnect. And each time you have that experience, you see these red flags for yourself for the future to understand, you know, who should be sitting in your chair. Or if you have someone who is, you know, giving you a hard time, recognizing, oh, I've experienced this before and here's how I handled it. Or maybe here's how I handled it and it wasn't the best way and here's how I'm going to change it. But I don't think you learn those things in beauty school. And I don't even know if it's something that can be taught. I think it's just, it comes with time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I love it. I love it. You know, my wife and I, in raising our kids, we talk a lot about resilience and grittiness and adaptation. And I think about all the people that I've known in my life who have been very successful in whatever they're doing, not necessarily just making a lot of money, but let's say they do something they love and they have a very happy life. These are the most resilient, adaptable, and gritty people that I know. And so, and you can only get that through those very uncomfortable sorts of situations and working your way through them in a thoughtful way, huh?
Absolutely. I mean, resilience is such a great word. I mean, I think that one really big thing that resilience kind of taught me over the years was how to be decisive and how to hold my ground in tough client situations or tough situations. I mean, a lot of the stuff that I started doing behind the chair, I found that it was sort of seeping out into my actual life. And I was able to set boundaries in my personal life and not just set boundaries behind the chair. But I think resilience also, I think a big part of it is part of your personality and who you are. But I do think it's something that can be learned as well.
Sure. So since we've gone straight into the topic of difficult clients, I kind of want to stay here. So do you have any, I was going to say great client stories, but really it's horrible client stories that have a great message. Do you have any right on the top of your head that might be of service to the hairdressers listening?
I mean, we all have like a Rolodex, right, of stories that we've experienced. I mean, I can think of a specific instant when I was a junior stylist years ago. And it was a client who I'm not even sure if they were unhappy with their hair. But I remember the experience because the client had come back to get something adjusted. And you know, when you're a junior stylist, you kind of have to take on everyone, right? You have to take all the clients so that you can, you know, build your book and you can get your name out there. And looking back years later, I realized, okay, really the issue was this was just not the right client for me. I wasn't able to provide what this client needed and they just, you know, we just didn't mesh. But what ended up happening was the client came back and we went to sit down and talk about how to adjust her hair. And it turned into something where she just for about, I would say it was 30 to 45 minutes, just sort of belittled me about, you know, what she didn't like about her hair. And I remember she said, "You're really great at talking, but not really great at doing hair." And I was just kind of like stab in the heart. But when I look back on the situation, I think what I realize is I couldn't have done anything differently because I didn't have the tools at that point to be able to cope with a situation like that.
Okay.
So I'm oddly grateful for those experiences. And I try to tell, when I teach, I try to tell stylists this. Don't get so down on yourself if you have those experiences because they're crucial. They're crucial to develop who you are going to be and continue to strive to be, if
right.
That makes sense.
Making you resilient. So
there you go.
Did that experience when that lady said that to you, it sounds like you recognized that you were a little weak on a particular thing. What? And you didn't go into the details, that's fine. But did you recognize that you were weak in a particular thing?
I 100% did. And it was actually a great experience in the sense that when I looked back on the conversation I had with her, I realized that the issue wasn't even the hair. It was the consultation that I had done with her.
Mm.
And it made me realize that I was not doing these thorough, in-depth consults. I was saying, you know, very plain and simple, "So what are we doing today?" And they'd say, "I want a haircut." And I'd say, "Sounds good. Let's go wash your hair." And so it really catapulted me into deciding that I was going to book into my appointment time, a significant amount of time to sit with my client, go through all possible parts of the consultation. And it taught me to safeguard myself in a client consultation, and also how to make sure that my client was 100% clear about what we were doing before we moved forward with the appointment.
Okay. So that is a bad, uncomfortable situation that had a great positive result, because you're able to look at it objectively, recognize that you did something wrong. Now, she obviously communicated it in maybe an unnecessarily harsh way, but you took it as, I need to objectively look at what I did wrong, and I recognize I did this wrong, and I'm going to improve, which simply makes you better going forward. Right?
100%. 100%.
And a lot of people, by the way, cannot get over the rudeness of the person, right?
Right. Totally. I mean, I'm a pretty forthright person. I've always been. And I'm not someone who really, I can't be easily insulted, because I myself am, I'm not going around insulting people, but I usually say how I feel. But I think if anything, I was more kind of taken aback by the way that she was presenting this information to me. And it really helped me to understand how to be more clear in the way that I speak to my clients and the way that I communicate. And I think of that experience a lot, especially when I'm teaching, because of the fact that I think a big misstep in our industry is not training all of us from the get-go about verbiage and how to communicate and how to safeguard ourselves. And then also how to lead our conversations with our clients with kindness and clarity, because a lot of times your clients just don't know. And in the end, with this woman, that's really what it was. If I look back on it, I do feel like it was my fault. I rushed through the consultation, and I remember this even at a junior stylist, rushed through the consultation, just wanted to get her in and out, and didn't really sit and take the time to manage her expectations. And that's okay. Where I went wrong.
Got it. And the communicating like what you're suggesting is a different level. It's a different level of ability. Whether you're a hairdresser or you're an insurance salesman or anything, whether you're a parent or a child, you know, communicating like that, with the empathy required, you know, everything, life experience that goes into it, that's a different level of skill, and probably comes with time. Some people might be natural at it, and those who aren't can build it with time. So tell us about how did you change your consultation? You said you built in more time. How much time do you build in for your I assume you do clients these days.
Yeah,
we'll get into all that. But how much time did you build into your consultation versus how much time do you now build into your consultation?
That is a great question. So I built in about 10 minutes just for my consultation. Today, I would say on average, it's about 15. So not a huge jump.
Well, it's 50% more.
Well, no, 15 minutes now I build in.
I know. But it was 10. It's 50% more. That's a lot.
You're correct. I'm bad at math, but this is good. So I never wanted to be a mathematician. But you're right. It is a lot. And what happened when I built in that 10 minutes, and I was fortunate enough that I was working somewhere where they were very supportive of that, and they understood that I needed to do that. My book started to grow so quickly. And it was also a little bit of maybe I am good at talking and also doing hair at the same time, you know, but it was definitely interesting, because I also felt that I was going and leading my appointments with way more confidence, because I wasn't going to the back room and saying to the person in the back, can you just go look at my client? Is she level 6 or is she level 7? I'm not sure. And I was able to talk to my clients, but I had to develop the consultation technique as I move through it throughout the years. I mean, now I feel very confident, but even I would say 4 years ago, I was still kind of figuring out what are the questions I want to ask and how do I want to navigate my client through this.
Okay, so you said that when you switched to the 15-minute consultation, your book started growing. But there's reasons in between those two things, right?
Yeah.
Why did your book start growing?
it was different. People weren't used to it. You know, at the time, there was way more double booking salons. And especially here in Philadelphia, we didn't have single chair salons. We didn't have suites. We didn't have all of this stuff where your expectation upon arrival is it's just you and the stylist. We are a city built of double booking salons. And so it was a different experience to come in and realize that, you know, wow, you're still here. We're still talking. It's kind of like if you ever gone to the doctor and they actually stay with you for like 20 minutes, you're thinking, is everything okay? But that's really, I mean, that's really sort of the nature of what I started finding. And on top of it, not just that it was different, I was finding that when I was getting referrals, they were coming in and they were sitting down and I would say, okay, well, before we get started, I'd like to ask you a bunch of questions. And they would go, oh, I heard about this, that you're going to do this. And I thought, oh, really? This is cool. I thought, this is a thing, man.
Amazing. All right, cool. I love that.
Yeah, that was very, very neat.
So that's how different it was, just adding the 5 minutes.
Absolutely. It was a huge shift in what at least the client in our area is used to, and not that any salons are doing it in a way it shouldn't be. It just wasn't a way that was comfortable for me.
How much of that, and when I say that, I'm talking about the impression on the client, because you clearly were making a very positive impression on the client versus your 10-minute consultation. How much of it was you getting the information that you needed versus simply showing the client that you care deeply about the experience that they're having?
I think it's 50-50 because so often, you know, I mean, first of all, it gave me an opportunity to sit down. I mean, I would sit down. We sit now, but I remember when I started going from having my consultation, which was kind of a quicker consult when I was a junior stylist, and I would stand behind my client and I would say, so what are we doing today? And, you know, I didn't want to make eye contact with them. I was like, turn your head, look in the mirror. And then when I started booking more time, what happened was I thought, well, why don't I take this consultation and make it more of a conversation? And so I came and I sat down and I realized that, you know, the way that I carry my body, even, you know, when you're standing over someone, asking them what they want to do, it's way more intimidating than when you sit and you're eye to eye with someone. And I think it's 50-50. It feels like a caring conversation. And this way, when you're delivering, I hate to say bad news, but when you're saying, I can't do that today, it's gentler. It's not as intimidating, if that makes sense.
Sure. Because it feels like you care.
Absolutely.
Versus,
and you do care. You do care.
You do care. It feels like you care to the client. And I wouldn't be surprised if you kind of, sometimes you make little adjustments in the way that you communicate, and it actually does affect how you feel about the way that you're communicating. You know what I mean? And so sitting down and having that conversation might just make you care a little bit more internally versus rushing. Because if you're standing, you don't sit down, you don't take the time, you probably don't get out of the mindset of rushing, you know, trying to fit in as many clients as possible. Does that make sense? Is that true?
I definitely think it's true, because you can't center yourself. And I mean, I think of every client that I get in a day, every new appointment slot, it's to a sense, it's a performance, right? So you have to prepare yourself before you go out there. And you want to make sure that you're leading in the consultation. I mean, I think the worst thing that can happen is if you are discombobulated and if you're rushed and your client comes in and sits down, you're about to touch someone for an hour or 4 hours or however the appointment is. If you don't think that they can feel that energy of you being rushed and being discombobulated, I mean, 100% they can. So I think taking the time to take care is really important.
What kind of kid were you?
Oh, I was a crazy child. I mean, I've always, my mom tells this story that she said, I used to crawl on the gravel when I was like a baby. And, you know, I was always someone who would stand up for people. I really didn't have a whole, it's weird because I wasn't really that afraid of things when I was a kid. I mean, I was afraid of things that little kids are afraid of, but I was always someone who, you know, if they said, you can't do it, I'd say, yes, I can. I mean, I auditioned for every single school musical and I always auditioned for the lead. And when I tell you the parts I would get like, you know, non-speaking roles. So it's not like I was auditioning for the leads and killing it.
Of course.
So I've just always been like that, I guess, where if someone says, I don't think you can do that, I say I disagree, which has been good and bad, because sometimes they're right.
Yeah, but failure is not so bad. We already talked about that. That builds resilience. And I think that what you're talking about is largely, I think it's natural. You know, as I've seen my two kids grow up, within their social network at school, there are kids who are simply fearless. They do not have any hesitation to do things that my son hesitates to do all the time. You know, and my son is, he thinks too much. He gets in his head and he finds reasons why not to do things, you know. And so we've been trying to encourage him to be brave. But I find that to be very natural. Okay, so why did you get into hair?
You know, I can't really pinpoint the moment where I made the decision, but I had no intentions of doing hair when I was younger. I had no intentions of doing hair after high school. And I honestly think, if I really think about it, I think I woke up one day and thought, I think I'm going to go to beauty school. And that's literally how I fell into it, which is so odd because I had lots of other different careers and lots of other different paths that I thought I was going to take. But it was the best decision. It's the best decision of my life.
What 100%. Else were you thinking about doing? If you didn't go to hair school, what would you be doing right now?
Well, so I actually have a bachelor's degree in fashion merchandising. So I really thought I was going to be in the fashion industry, which technically I am, right?
Yeah.
But I studied fashion merchandising, worked for some fashion companies, and I kind of didn't really know what I was going to do. I was, you know, I was doing assistant work at a lot of these companies and feeling very lost. I worked for a U.S. customs broker for a while, which was very odd.
Yes.
Lots of waitressing, tons of waitressing. So I felt like I was figuring it out in an odd way. Mm-hmm. And then when I did, it all clicked and made sense. But it was kind of a strange journey.
So it sounded like you went to hair school later than many people.
I did.
What
so
age?
I went to hair school when I was 24 years old.
Yeah.
So I was definitely later in the game. I mean, I was one of the oldest people in my class. But I think it was good because it's another reason you had asked me at the beginning, why four? Why did four people graduate out of 17? And I think it's because those of us that were there were very clear in what our intention was for being there.
Mm-hmm. All right. So tell us what you're doing now. Is this office, you're sitting in the office of the salon. So I'm assuming you own the salon?
I do. I own the salon. We're here in Center City, Philadelphia, which is also called Rittenhouse. And we have stylists out on the floor right now, and I just have my office door closed talking to you.
Yeah.
So that's what we're doing right now.
Very cool. When did you open that salon?
So it was opened in 2015. And we are in an office building. We're in a big office building. And in the since 2015 that we opened, I've expanded the salon within the building. This is our third time. So we grew really organically. And the joke with our clients is we kept going up one floor. So it's a little ridiculous.
That's cool, though. So how many stations do you have now?
So we have six stations. But we don't use all of the stations. Right now we have Lauren, we have Maureen, we have Kate, myself, and then we have a stylist, Shannon, who works with us a couple times a year she comes in. So we're a smaller team.
Yeah. So how did COVID affect you?
I mean, it was pretty shocking, right? Like all of us in the industry. It was intense to have to – I personally felt like I was letting down my team because they worked so hard, and it was very odd to have to say, hey, we're about to close our doors for 4 months. we closed, I believe it was March 16th. You know, it was a shock to everyone in our industry. I can't say it affected us any differently than it affected everyone else, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty intense.
Did your landlord help with the rent?
So our landlord, we do have to pay back our rent. But our landlord has been kind enough to say, I'm going to work with you guys. And so we're really lucky. I actually went in and talked to him in the midst of everything. And I, you know, I don't know if this is helpful for any salon owners out there, but I went and I sat down and I said, hey, listen, you know, I've been in this building since 2015, and every growth decision I have made has been calculated. I am not someone who makes rash decisions. And I said, the reason you want me to stay here is because I'm going to have this entire floor one day. And when I said that, he said, well, I'm going to help you get there. And it was an amazing conversation. I mean, I felt very fortunate that he was, you know, able to do that for us.
So he deferred your rent, which means you're going to have to pay it back. Did you get any PPP or any something like that?
So we weren't able to get any of that, unfortunately. But what we did do is we have applied for a couple of grants. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the nature of a salon like ours that's smaller is the idea that, you know, your overhead is generated by, you know, by people coming in and getting their hair done. Mm-hmm. So we were fortunate enough that we didn't have to worry so much about the rent. We could kind of take a deep breath. And so we just waited, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course. There's little else that we could do, right? So
absolutely.
When did you reopen?
So we reopened. Pennsylvania was allowed to go back at the end of June. We opted to wait two additional weeks till July 7th because we knew we were going to need a week just to reschedule people. Mm-hmm. And then on top of it, I wanted my team to rehearse. You know, it's new experiences, it's new procedures. So what we did was we had everyone bring in their family and friends who had been waiting. And we said, hey, guys, like, bring them in and let's do some role playing here and let's see what the process would be like. We needed our front desk to rehearse. What would it be like to intake clients in this process? We're taking COVID very seriously. And so we have a lot of procedures that we're doing to really safeguard our team and to dissuade people who aren't serious about it from coming here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how's it been?
It's been great. We're super fortunate. Our clients are awesome. I mean, they've been understanding. We've had a couple clients call and say, hey, I'm awaiting COVID test results. I need to reschedule my appointment. We've had people say, you know, I'm traveling to, you know, a place that's on the PA list of quarantine, and I won't have time to quarantine for 14 days. Everyone is, I think, being as respectful towards us as we are being towards them. So I really feel lucky in saying we've only really had positive experiences since being back.
Very lucky. You know, the culture right now out there is obviously very tense as it pertains to businesses, especially small businesses and customers, because the customers are annoyed. You know, the people who are working at the businesses are annoyed. You've got the plastic things, you know, and you're trying to hear the person, and you know, the cashier is trying to hear the customer, and it's just annoying. And I've seen people on edge. In fact, a local restaurant here in where I live, in just north of LA, posted something on their Instagram that basically said, you know, ever since, you know, we've been open during this thing, we've experienced just so many clients who are just total assholes, you know, yelling at us if we ask them to wear a mask. Or, you know, super rude if our outdoor dining is full and stuff like that. And I see it as well. And I just hope that I hope that all of us in the industry can cope with it, and recognize that it is a temporary thing until we get through this. And hopefully we can try to encourage those people around us who are our friends and family who are also customers of other businesses to not be so on edge with these businesses. You know, people, absolutely. We've gotten so used to, as consumers, we've gotten so used to businesses, whether it's a salon or a coffee shop or a restaurant, we've gotten so used to businesses catering to every little whim that we have as a customer. And now that we're not getting things exactly as we want them, we're lashing out and complaining and threatening to write negative Yelp reviews and all these types of things. And I just think it's horrible. I have one friend who's like this. I call him a consumer terrorist. I said, you're just a total asshole. You know you're a total asshole. And like, I'm not going to go.
This is a friend of yours.
Yeah, this is somebody I know. And, you know, he's normal otherwise, but yet when we go to a restaurant, his standards and demands are unreasonable. And I think that, of course, it says more about him and his personality than the restaurant's ability to satisfy him as a customer. You know, he's just in there. And I think it gives him a sense of status for him to complain a lot. And so, you know, for those listeners who are experiencing clients like this, just hang in there, be resilient, hang in there. 100%. And, you know, in time, I think we'll get back to normal. But really great to hear that all of your clients have been fantastic.
They've been good. And listen, I mean, we definitely, when we were rescheduling people, had a couple people that were a little snippy, but we just explained the situation. You know, we just said, hey, listen, we hear you 100%. I hear you that you're upset. But, you know, this is what it is.
Yeah.
And also letting things kind of roll off your shoulder a little bit.
Got to do that. Okay. So are you one client only per hairdresser right now? Is that a limitation in Pennsylvania?
It is a limitation in Pennsylvania. For us, we were lucky because that's what we always were. So we kind of stepped back into what we were already doing. But one client at a time, 50% capacity. And then, you know, obviously keeping your station socially distanced, 6 feet apart. So.
In looking at your ADH website and the different things you talk about on your social media, and you obviously have student clients, you talk about business as well as just blonding techniques, correct?
Yes.
So what are your favorite, I'll ask the question this way. What are the questions that you're getting from your students now from a business perspective more than you've ever gotten before?
Well, a lot of students are wanting to change the way in which they price, because a lot of them are coming from being in a double booking scenario to now not having a choice and having to take one client at a time and not sure how they're going to make ends meet or how to transition their book. And also a lot of them, on that same note, have now experienced taking one client at a time, are loving it, and are saying, When the restrictions drop, I want to keep doing this. So the main question always that I get, COVID or not COVID, is always pricing. For sure, that's a big one. I think the other one that I would have to say is lateness before was always an issue, but people, you know, a lot of stylists are coming to me and saying, I'm experiencing real disrespect with lateness, and I don't have time in this scenario for someone to be late because there's so much sanitation, there's so much safety procedures, and how to communicate that information to the client.
All right. So let's deal with the first one. What are you telling these, what are you telling hairdressers who were double booking? That was their system. That was the way that they're making their income. Their expenses were based on that. Their income is based on, et cetera. So how do you advise someone who is moving to a one client at a time situation?
Well, you know, something that I encourage a lot and that we have on Lightning Library that we do a lot is to create sort of go-to scripts for your business life behind the chair. Because every time I personally have experienced something in business and have had to figure out how to communicate information or respond to a text or do a price increase, I save whatever I wrote so that if I have to do it again, I have a point of reference. So I always tell people that being straight and to the point, but being professional and also, you know, delivering the message in a kind way is really important. So, you know, I will usually, in the Lightning Library, if they write me, I just write them a script because I'm like, let me just do this. I'll take care of it for you. But, you know, saying to your clients, you know, to my valued clients, you know, it is with great excitement that I announce to you that I have made the decision going forward to spend more quality time with you at your appointments and promote quality over quantity. With this growth comes change, as I will be changing the structure of my pricing going forward and just communicating in that way. And then the biggest thing I always tell them is make sure when you communicate that message, however they receive it, they need time to process it. You know, when you're dealing with talking to someone about money, their reaction is going to be whatever is based on their own relationship with money. So if someone comes back aggressively, that's them saying, I'm afraid. If someone comes back and says, sounds good, they're a dream client. But I just try to tell them that, you know, you can only be the bad guy if you don't communicate it and wait till they get to the front desk and say, guess what, it's going to be more money. But it's like ripping off a Band-Aid. If you're going to change your pricing, you got to just do it.
It's so true with just about anything uncomfortable. The more you put it off, the more it's going to become it starts off as like a little pebble in your shoe, and then it becomes like a real, you know, it's something bigger and something more annoying and something really problematic. Sometimes you just got to do it.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
So you said that when you you were talking about scripts for different scenarios. I mean, I think that's a great idea because I have similar scripts for different things that I deal with. And I write them in the notes app on my phone. What do you do? What do you suggest to people?
I think that's a great idea because, you know, if you are, I believe that all salons should be text-based personally, because I think the beauty of being text-based is you can document every conversation you have. So it allows you to really, you know, safeguard yourself.
When you say text-based, are you talking about just written versus verbal? So in other words, email or text?
100%. Yeah. So here at ADH, if you call us, we don't pick up. The voicemail actually says we're not going to pick up. If you want to communicate with us, and it's not in this sort of, we're not doing it to be hard to reach, but we're doing it so that we can stay organized and have all these conversations documented. I find that being text-based or email-based, it's a lot easier for my OCD brain. That's really kind of what it comes down to.
Interesting. I haven't heard about that. I mean, it makes sense as you describe it.
Yeah.
And it works as long as you have somebody who's right there watching the email inbox, right?
Yes.
Because that's the concern for email, is that the email goes out there into the ether, and then it's days until there's a response.
It's true. I mean, listen, it really, I think it's becoming text-based is really, and being able to respond to all those things. I mean, there's a lot of situations that you could say this isn't going to work. I mean, if you are a one-on-one stylist, you're going to have to book an hour into your day where you're just responding to texts or emails, right? Mm-hmm. Don't try to do it in between clients. For us, we have a front desk team, so that's their job, is mm-hmm. to answer all of those. But so far texts have not fallen by the wayside, but I could see how it's possible. 100%.
What are you advising hairdressers in regards to finding new clients during this time? Because I imagine that there's going to be some clients who are sensitive to getting their hair done at all or as much. So this is going to leave holes in the book. So what are you suggesting to them as ways to build?
I mean, I think using the tool of Instagram, which is such an incredible advertising tool, is so important. I very much believe in being transparent about what openings you have. I think a lot of times hairstylists don't want to post on their page or story that they have openings because they want, you know, people to think that they're super busy. But you know, if I get an opening, I post it on my story and page. You know, I think that it's crucial to do it, because what happens is when you're doing that, it's not about people seeing it and saying, oh, okay, she has an opening, I'm going to go. It's about training your client base and your potential client base that there is a place that they can go to see if you have openings. That's easy, right? So it's like your bulletin board, essentially.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
So that's what I would say. Yeah.
I like that idea a lot. And from the standpoint of the client, sometimes there's a feeling of friction with the client in thinking, okay, I looked at myself in the mirror this morning and I think I need to go to Janice, but God, I don't really want to wait 3 weeks, or I don't want to have to go through the bullshit of, you know, finding a time next week or next month or whatever. I love the idea of, you know, Janice, she thought in her head that she needs to go to the salon, but she didn't want to go through the bullshit. She's got 14 other things. Her kids are all, you know, driving her nuts. But when she gets the time to go to her gram, she sees that there's an appointment. Oh, yes. You know, I can do that tomorrow at 3:00. I'm in.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think that's great advice.
And again, I mean, what you're doing is you're setting a precedent. And you're saying, you know, this is where I communicate my information.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see why you wouldn't utilize that as a tool when it's free.
Yeah, right. It's real information. It's not just pictures of other clients, you know, once a week. It's real information. Valuable.
It is real valuable. It's true.
Hey guys, I'm back. We're going to cut this episode right here and come back next week with part two. In the second half of the conversation, we talk about a lot more great stuff. So hope to see you back here next week to wrap it up with Adrian. As always, reach out to me with any questions or comments. If you like the Hair Game podcast, please screenshot this episode and share it on your Instagram stories. I repost them as much as I can, as much as I see them. Next week's pod loot will be a GHD Pro hairdryer, GHD Pro hairdryer. For a chance to win it, write a review on the Apple Podcast app or Stitcher.com for you Droid users. The review has to include your exact Instagram handle. That's how I know who you are. We write down your name, we put it in a bag, and we draw your name. You have to be following the Hair Game podcast and Lover Taylor on Instagram. Donovan, by the way, since we're working remotely to some degree, Donovan is the one who pulls your names every single week. So maybe you can butter up to him. You can DM him at the Hair Game podcast, butter up to him, and maybe he'll cheat for you. Just kidding, Donovan. Just kidding, listeners. No cheating. You have to be listening to win, so you can DM us your mailing address or your email address, whatever we need to send you your pod loot. If you don't win, keep listening, because your name stays in Donovan's bag, in Donovan's office. You can win any week on any episode. For complete details, go to salonrepublic.com. Look forward to seeing you back next Monday. Until then, have a great week.